it's time to take this game into overtime.
The official podcast
of the Average Joe's Sports Show
on 90.9 The Light Sports
for our generation.
We'll start with the Furious Five. And what better way to start the Furious Five than recapping what was some calling the best national championship game in the last 10 or 15 years. But ultimately, the rematch goes to Clemson. 35-31, the championship parade taking place today down in South Carolina. I know our own Jeremy Fitch is down there hanging out, watching Clemson parade around. They're able to get it done on the last second. It had shades of the 2005 national championship game with Texas and USC. Did it? Is the question, guys. I'm sure you watched the whole game, all 5 hours of it, almost. We'll talk about that a little bit. But what were your first impressions of this game, just right off the bat, and how these teams were able to compete? The compete level was very strong.
Well, I definitely had a lot of first impressions from this game. A lot was going through my head after watching this game. First thing, this game was way too long. I want to get into that a little later, but I want to focus on the play here. It was really a great game. I mean, if you look at how that game ended and how it went through the first three quarters, and so going back and forth, Bama looked like they had the upper edge, Clemson coming back with the veteran quarterback. I mean, in my opinion, this probably was the best championship game we've seen since 2006, since Texas beat USC 41-38. Maybe I'll throw in the Florida State-Auburn game a couple years ago.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
That was a really good game with Jameis Winston. I mean, we've got, or was that Cam Newton?
No, that was Jameis
Winston. Jameis Winston.
They came back. They roared back.
Yeah, so that game and this game probably competing for the best championship game in the last 10 years or so, but it's still not the best. USC-Texas, in my mind, is the best championship game I've ever seen. I can't really speak on some of those games in the 80s with the U and with Nebraska. I know some of those games are legendary, but in my lifetime, Texas USC number one, Clemson Alabama part two, number two, in the championship games.
All right, Kyle, your thoughts on the game?
I watched every second, including commercials. It was probably around 6 hours.
I fell asleep for the first part of the fourth quarter.
The game ended at 12:27 a.m. Tuesday morning,
and
it seemed like it was longer than that.
I was just as excited at that moment as I was at the beginning of kickoff. Like, that whole game had me on my seat, like the edge of my seat, watching how each of those coaches were coaching their teams to a different ability of what they were playing. You had Nick Saban, who was just, honestly, I thought his defense was going to continue to just pummel Clemson. Because that's what they started doing, and that's what it felt like, and Clemson wasn't going to be able to get everything going. Then Deshaun Watson started going off, and you saw Dabo Swinney just start coaching his guys, and he said it. You know, their team was about love this season. And so he had a completely different coaching style, but you saw that collapse of just ingenuity and awesome coaching come together. And it was great. It was so much fun. Each play, you never knew what was going to happen, because on, you know, Clemson's offensive side, you knew at any moment Deshaun Watson or Mike Williams was going to have something.
That boy's special.
Right?
That boy's special.
Going to the draft, just declared this week.
But
first round, definitely.
At the same time, you know that Alabama's defense can create a turnover and a touchdown at any moment.
But they just looked tired at the end of the game.
But that was the end of the game. That was what was so impressive, was Clemson just continually pummeled offensively to the point that I don't think Alabama could just keep up with them. And I really, really hope that this shows that there are other teams that can bring Alabama into the light of what they are.
Well, honestly, this was probably the best defense we've ever seen. I mean, that was in the debate before Clemson did what they did last week. This Alabama defense was considered on multiple platforms one of the best defenses we've ever seen in college.
I honestly thought this was one of the best teams ever.
It was. I mean,
Alabama.
It was really considered one of the most dominant teams.
I think if they had won and they had won handily, we would have put this Alabama team in the conversation for one of the best season runs of all time.
Which makes what Deshaun Watson in that offense,
absolutely,
what they did, it makes it so impressive how they marched down that field with under 2 minutes left in the game and scored a touchdown with 1 second left. So impressive.
Deshaun Watson, 36 for 56, 420 yards, 3 touchdowns.
This is the second time in a national championship game against Alabama that he's thrown over 400 yards.
Yeah, he's the
two
only
times
one to do
in
that.
A row. Like,
I mean, the man made himself some money in that game right there.
Yeah.
He made himself some money for the draft.
Well, that's also what it was a platform for him.
People still have him low, which is insane to me. They have him in the second to third round even.
He'll be a first round. You know how the draft works. These quarterbacks get hyped up. They slowly creep up the board. We would have never thought Jared Goff and Carson Wentz were going to be the first two picks earlier in the year. I mean, it eventually got to that point. But right after college football ended, you didn't think those guys
really
were going to be the
way they evaluate the these guys is they look at them.
They're like,
more,
they're good
it's
picks,
more performance-based, and it's more how they can last with the team. It's not so much how good the team does. So you have these guys like these Alabama quarterbacks. Jake Coker is a good example. Where's he now? I don't even think he got drafted.
He was. I looked up a couple of the old quarterbacks, and there was a couple that had been on practice squads. One of them, I can't remember where Blake Sims ended up.
Yeah, that's what Alabama does.
But there are a few of them that, yeah, you just don't know where they are. But at the same time, look at A.J. McCarron. Like, I don't want to throw all of Alabama quarterbacks into that.
I think A.J. McCarron should have gotten, I think he should have gotten a starting job.
Absolutely. I think he's better than Jared Goff, and he's definitely better than
I think
than
he's better than Brock
others.
Osweiler.
Well, he'll be traded in the offseason. He'll be a starting quarterback next year.
Well,
it'll happen.
I really hope so, because everything I've seen him do, including in his few starts even last season, everything I've seen him do was very impressive and non-mistake-making.
To go back to this game, though, do you think that injury to Bo Scarborough was really the turning point in this game? Or was it just the defense? Was Bo Scarborough's injury...
Both.
If he didn't get injured, would they have won?
I don't know.
Look at the procession of the game. Alabama goes up 14-0. First drive, punches it in right there. Second drive, punches it in. You know? And those were pretty lengthy drives. So I think that they were able to really dominate the game with Bo Scarborough behind him, and they were able to just have him bust through, and at that point it looked like, you know, Alabama was going to run away with it.
Once they had to go to Jalen Hurts, he wasn't ready. This guy,
it was very
he's going
evident.
To be a talented player in college.
Well, I'll tell you, Jalen Hurts, I thought they made a huge mistake right at the end, and that is scoring too early. Jalen Hurts, the 30-yard touchdown run, he should have fallen down at the 10-yard line. That's what I would have done. He gave him too much time.
We've seen that in the NFL.
He scored
agree.
2 minutes and 7 seconds left. He should have scored with about 30 seconds left. Like, why are you giving Clemson that much time? I know you want to score and get in there, and I know you want to trust your defense, too.
It's the freshman mistake.
This is
mistake.
A team that had already punched it in. That is a freshman mistake, and that cost him the championship game. If he had waited a little bit longer and you know, just sat on the clock, I think they would have won.
I don't think that's how Nick Saban plays exactly, or coaches.
But that's how he should have played. That's how it should have been.
But if Hurts had done that, I have a feeling that we would be, you know, talking about how Nick Saban killed his starting quarterback in the national championship.
Well, you also have to consider the game flow and how that defense was starting to get really tired.
But they didn't expect him to go and do what they did. I mean, how many yards was that?
Well, you can't necessarily expect that, but you have to be ready for anything.
Nine plays they ran down the field.
You
don't expect that at all.
You have to be ready for anything. And when your defense is starting to get tired out like that, and Deshaun Watson previously already had over 350 yards passing, he was having a great day already before that last drive. This defense had no answer to him.
Nine plays, 68 yards.
Well, there is one thing that shows in the stats, and that is that Deshaun Watson definitely outplayed everybody, even Bo Scarborough, even though he was injured. Jalen Hurts, it was only over in the air, 13 for 31 with 131 yards and a touchdown.
That's another reason this game was so long. He had 20 incompletions right there. Yeah. I mean, the clock was stopped so many times. This was over a four-hour
game. He had one pass that I swear would have been at least... He had one that was a touchdown for sure that he just overthrew the guy by like 10 yards. And then he had another pass that should have been caught. I feel like it should have been caught, but he just didn't have the placement on it.
I think there are going to be big changes here because they saw a drop in the ratings from last year and a big drop in the ratings since 2 years ago. And this might have been a better game than both of those.
Well, before
this was a better game than both
and,
of those.
And their ratings are continuing going
down. I think it was
because
of the length. People had people had to go to work.
Oh, anybody.
People couldn't stay up and watch it.
People had to go to work. Kids had to go to school the next day.
I give credit
Nobody
to...
Nobody wanted to stay up till 12:30 in the afternoon to watch this game.
My 60-year-old father made it to...
In the morning.
The beginning of the fourth quarter, which at that point was after 11, and I give him credit. I thought he was going to go to bed at halftime.
Yeah, you want the casual fans to be able to watch this. You need to make it.
They definitely
They're already talking about kind of putting some pace of play rules on college football.
They need to adopt the NFL
games
clock
are too,
rules.
No, I don't think games are too long. I will tell you that because people are paying a lot of money to go to these games. I don't think you want to shorten them too much. It's a great experience.
Earlier.
When you go to an NFL football game or even a college game, first quarter's great. Second quarter's great. Yeah, you do start in the morning, especially for college football. Third quarter, fourth quarter, depending on how much money you spent, you better hope something good happens, you know? You're sitting there, you're trying to watch the game because that's your experience. That's how much money you've spent.
Well, there's no excuse for this game to start at 8:30 on a Monday night.
Yeah, they could make it to 7.
Easily, they could have done 7 o'clock.
Let's move away from that for a little bit and talk about Alabama, kind of their downfall, and I honestly think it was just a couple of faulty decisions. Do you guys think that those decisions were made faulty on the part of Steve Sarkisian jumping into the offensive coordinator? This team switches 7 days before the national championship, and Lane Kiffin, they part ways with him. Was that a major problem? I definitely think it was, because you look at the way they were running the plays. I think that they were definitely missing something, and I think they were running plays that Steve Sarkisian kind of, you have Lane Kiffin all year, and he's an offensive genius. We already know that. He's, you know, been to the NFL. He's had his own college team. And you throw in a guy like Steve Sarkisian, you're switching up everything that the team has done all season long. How big of an impact do you think that made?
I mean, he was there. He's been with this team most of the year, and they put up 31 points. They play any other team, they would have won. 31 points is enough to beat almost every other team
absolutely.
In college football.
I don't think it
they
was
just
an
got
issue
outmatched.
At all. I do think they got outcoached by Dabo Swinney and his crew. I definitely think that they got outplayed by the athleticism of the Clemson team, both sides of the football. The issue was not on the offensive side of coaching or plays. I
Their
think
play
it was,
calling was,
I think it was offensively
was pretty good, actually, in
player
my opinion.
Wise. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sarkisian's have been there all season long, pretty much. They have the same exact, both him and Kiffin have the same exact play call style. And I truly believe that where his, essentially what he's been doing is offensive coordinating from the booth this whole time with Kiffin. I think they've been, you know, really good at communicating that. So he jumped right in. I didn't see anything different offensively that I haven't seen all year. What I saw
was Jalen Hurts
young
crushing to the pressure of a big game like this, which is expected. And
yeah,
honestly,
it's not truly.
And they were
him.
So. And even then, he still scored the go-ahead touchdown in late in the fourth quarter. And they still put up 31 points, so it's not like this offense crapped the bed here.
No, and haters are going to hate. There are going to be people who are, you know, frustrated with the coaching
we
and
could
frustrated
pick at anything.
With this. And, yeah, they're going to make excuses. But the honest-to-goodness truth is most of all of the issues that happened that night for Alabama was created by Clemson. Like, Clemson made those into bigger
Clemson
issues.
Clemson won this game rather than Alabama losing this
absolutely.
Overall.
Absolutely.
All right, well, quickly, you take a look at what we were talking about, more of the aesthetics of the game. How much did that factor into, you know, how good of a game it was? You had how it was played on the field, an instant classic, 35-31. You look at the ratings.
Since 1999. Fourth lowest.
4% increase from the 2016 championship game, a 15.3 overnight Nielsen rating, 26.03 million viewers. In terms of streaming, it did very well. It was the third highest watched game by streaming on ESPN.
I was streaming it on ESPN, so.
Yeah, so.
I hoped.
It's. I mean, I guess it just goes because of streaming, but I think that there definitely were some problems in terms of the aesthetics of the game. One of them was that it was too long. Another one was that the camera angles were kind of all over the place. And I think ESPN really outdoes themselves because they try to, you know, have 35 different people. You had, you know, Bill Walton on one of those talking about marijuana. You had the camera zoomed in too high.
Yeah.
I mean, they would have thrown just about anybody on to try to talk about this game. Do you guys like that ESPN tries to do it up, or do you think it's too much?
I thought there was too much.
We were watching the championship game with my dad. He wouldn't even let me turn on something else. He just wanted to watch the game.
One thing I thought that they were trying to do was trying to turn this into a mini Super Bowl.
Yeah.
They're trying to turn the national championship game into a mini Super Bowl because they want people to watch no matter who's in it.
And you can't.
Right,
you know why?
Right now,
you can't.
It's regional.
Can't.
And people watch it based on who's in it. The casual fans watch it. Oh, and I think something interesting here is these were both Southern teams. You got Alabama and Clemson. That's very regional. They're not very far from each other.
I think there's Alabama teams all over the there's Alabama fans all over the country and all over the world.
But I think you need something like Texas USC. That's why that was such a great game and the ratings were so good. You need a Notre Dame and a Texas or somebody from the West Coast. What interest does the West Coast have in this game? Alabama versus Clemson.
I think there's a lot of Alabama fans on the West Coast. That's why.
I don't think there are as many as maybe we assume. Enough to make the ratings great because we saw the ratings were not very good.
Well, and one of the situations was where it was in Tampa, right? I believe it was in Tampa. If it had been on the West Coast somewhere, if it had been, you know,
if it was the Rose Bowl,
if it had been something along those lines, I think that it would have been a phenomenal hit. So,
well, that's in the books, and we'll take a look at what's going to happen next year in college football. Certainly a good way to end the season, though. And I think that they'll definitely make some changes. All right, next up, we move to some professional fighting boxing news.
The struggle for the Floyd Mayweather-Conor McGregor saga to actually come into fruition
continues on now. UFC owner and chairman Dana White getting involved. He made his offer to Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor on The Herd this past week. He said he wants to pay each one $25 million. And then talking about a pay-per-view split at a certain number, he called it a real offer. He went on to say a lot of other things, called out Floyd Mayweather on many different levels. Floyd Mayweather had originally made an offer to Conor McGregor to split pay-per-view profits with him and give him $15 million, which is flat-out insulting. But
yeah, that
Floyd Mayweather is he called Dana White pretty much immediately after he called him a expletive comedian. So Floyd Mayweather obviously not going to accept this deal, looking for a little bit more money. His last fight, which was in 2015, he got paid $32 million. How much is Floyd Mayweather going to have to get in order to do this fight? And why do we have to do it on his terms? I mean, I know we all want to see him fight, but I think...
Because of his ego.
Dana White really called him out. I love what he started to go on and say. Floyd Mayweather, I guess, called himself an A-side with the fight. He said, Dana White said, you know, how are you an A-side? His last fight did 350,000 pay-per-view buys. Conor's last fights did 1.3 million and 1.5 million. So I don't understand how you think you're the A side. And there's a reason why you want this Conor McGregor fight so bad, because you know it's your money fight. So,
I have so much to say about this. This is insane. Conor McGregor has done 3 to 4 times more pay-per-view buys than Floyd Mayweather's. Yeah. I mean, that's it right there. Boxing is
dead. Manny Pacquiao.
Boxing is dead.
Manny Pacquiao is too nice.
Here.
Manny Pacquiao is too nice to try to really go and challenge Floyd Mayweather.
And
Conor McGregor is not like that.
Pacquiao was broke at the time. He needed any money he could get. Boxing is a dead sport. When was the last great boxing fight you've seen?
Pacquiao Mayweather.
Look at that. Silence. Silence.
I mean, I'm not a boxing aficionado, and neither is Kyle.
We should know at least when the great boxing fights happen, and there
Canelo
hasn't
Alvarez
been one.
Is coming up, so I mean.
It's dead. Conor McGregor has the it factor right now. He's international, which is huge, and He is the it star. He's got the draw right now. And Floyd Mayweather, what else does he have right now? He can't make any other money doing anything. No one's going to fight him in boxing. No one. He's not going to fight anybody else for the ring, except if Pacquiao wants to make another comeback. No. I don't know. But nobody really wants to see that again at this point.
Nobody.
If Floyd Mayweather wants to make money, he has to fight Conor McGregor.
Well, that's where, you know, I think Dana White's absolutely correct in the fact that both him and Colin Cowherd both thought that Mayweather is throwing out these huge numbers because he doesn't want to actually fight.
He doesn't want to fight.
He doesn't want to fight because I think he knows, for one, he's out of shape. Two, that would mean a lot of training and a lot of work and a lot of stuff that he probably doesn't want to put his body through. And then three, it means his undefeated, you know, amount of wins is could be contested all of a sudden. You know, it, that is his fame right now. His the fact that he had zero losses, and then all of a sudden he has to fight again where he doesn't know. Like, there's no way of knowing that he would just absolutely blow this out in boxing.
I think there's very little chance that Conor McGregor would ever win this fight in boxing rules, but that small chance that he does
really
could ruin.
You don't think he could outbox
Mayweather?
Floyd Mayweather?
I don't know his training right now.
I think he could.
I think I'm with Joe.
Conor McGregor's his style is to go after and hurt somebody, and that's not boxing. Boxing is to out technician the other guy.
Well, then he needs to he needs somebody to help him harbor that passion and go hurt somebody.
I agree.
Into hurting somebody with his fists in boxing, and if he can get that down, then he can fight Floyd Mayweather. I really think he can do it because, one, I think he has the passion. I think he has the sustainability. I think he has the focus. He's got the mental side down. If he puts his mind to something, he can go out and he can beat Floyd Mayweather. And Floyd Mayweather's ego certainly kind of harbors a passion for somebody to beat him. I think that if you're really, really passionate about what you do in Conor McGregor, I think that he can go out and he can beat Floyd Mayweather. Now, physically, I think that Floyd Mayweather, he does his dance. He does his crouch. And I think Conor McGregor is going to have to drag him out of that. And I think he wants to. If he starts doing what he did during the McGregor-Pacquiao fight, I think McGregor would stop the fight.
Oh,
and
what
he'd go,
Floyd did versus yes. in the Floyd.
Yep. I think he would stop the fight. Pacquiao he'd go, fight. Stop, stop, stop. He'd go, don't do this, okay? We're all here to fight. I want to fight. Let's fight.
One thing
and
is, you're
Mayweather
right,
would never
on
fight.
A show.
Floyd Mayweather would never fight on UFC rules. Let's just get that straight.
Never,
he would never
he would
do
get
it.
Destroyed.
Yep, exactly.
He would get destroyed.
Exactly.
He would get he destroyed
would
by
it.
One of the worst
so I
UFC
applaud,
fighters.
I applaud Conor McGregor for what he's doing, crossing over to a sport that he's not necessarily familiar with.
But remember, he boxed as an amateur boxer for like 3 years before
he
MMA.
He wants to put on a show, and he would.
In this situation,
he wants to win,
I
and he
believe
would.
That McGregor can win and probably is,
yeah.
is on the more plus side
oh,
of,
I,
of
I
winning.
Would, I would love to see it, and I would love to see McGregor win. But Pacquiao, after that fight, Pacquiao just, you know, he said, I'm grateful for the fight, thank you. And then it was over with, and he went home. McGregor's not going to go home if Floyd lasts all the rounds and doesn't throw a punch. He's not going to do that. He's going to make a scene. I mean, you're going to have they're going to take it. If that's on anything but pay-per-view, they'll take it off the air because he's going to cuss so much it's not even funny. He will throw a temper tantrum, and good. Embrace
and
that because
an
that's what Floyd
show.
Mayweather deserves right now. It's not about putting on a show. It's about exposing Floyd Mayweather.
Well, and yeah, that's something that
going
McGregor,
after
McGregor is the only
Mayweather.
Person who could do that, though,
yes.
too.
Go after.
Because
this needs to happen.
His attitude and his ego is just as big as Mayweather's, but right now,
he's better.
McGregor's,
and he's older, too.
McGregor is in the situation that he is the only person who could do this.
Well, and people actually care about the UFC. No one really cares about
and
boxing
even
at
if
this point.
Floyd
even
doesn't
if,
need the money.
And McGregor
or,
knows.
Not Floyd, but
McGregor knows
McGregor
that if he loses.
The
they both want the money.
But they both want
McGregor
the money.
Knows needs, that if he yeah, loses, it's nothing. It's a drop in the bucket. He's yeah, lost before. It's
exactly.
MMA. He'll go on and then he'll you know beat somebody else down yeah. at another time. Mayweather's the one who's he can't afford to lose.
No.
At all.
For everything he paints himself as.
Right. So McGregor's just going out there like, I just want to fight.
Yep. And I really hope that it'll happen. I hope that they're able to figure something out with Dana White. By the way, just popped up on my Facebook. Or excuse me. Sorry about that. I thought I saw something completely different. All right, moving on. Baseball off-season deals to avoid
arbitration.
Arbitration.
Why? It's too early, man. Why do I think that says arbitration? That's not a word. I said something on the air at hockey yesterday that wasn't a word. I can't remember what it was. I just made up a word. But hey, you know what happens.
Bill Walton.
All right. Nolan Arenado and Bryce Harper signing deals to avoid arbitration.
There we go.
Yeah.
I was
so working on that one.
For theatrical effect. Thank you. Bryce Harper, $13.625 million, 1 year deal. And Nolan Arenado, 2 years, 29 and a half. That's just a couple of some of the other deals that happened. Arrieta gets $15.6 million for 1 year, and then a whole bunch of other people. But I do want to focus on this Bryce Harper deal for a second. And we were kind of saying, could this be the year that he signs for, you know, $500 million with the Yankees?
Well, it was always going to be next offseason that he signs. He was still under contract for a year. So the way arbitration works is it's a way for the player to pretty much just get more money that last year before he hits free agency.
Yeah, well, he's going to get it.
So it's the way of when you're outplaying your kind of rookie contract. I guess it's if you played less than 6 years in the MLB but more than three experience-wise, then you're up for arbitration. And then it has something to do with compensation picks in the draft. So if the player accepts the pick, then if he leaves the team, then the team gets a draft pick. So it has something to do with compensation picks if they end up leaving after arbitration. But this really sets up, is Bryce Harper going to leave or is he going to stay after this
year? Well, he has another year to kind of, you know, the Nationals can see how valuable is Bryce Harper to our team.
He's coming off an off season after that MVP season. Yeah. Now he had a down year in his standards. He's got this 1 year deal to play it out, to see what worth he is for the Nationals, to get his value back up. If he wants to get that $400 million, he's got to go lights out and bat 300. He's got to get 30 home runs. He's got to be a top 10 MVP pick this year if he wants to get that $400 million. But reports earlier in the year that the Nationals are ready to move on either way, no matter what happens. So the way arbitration worked is now if Bryce Harper leaves, they get, I believe, a first-round pick from the team who signs him. So they get something in return at least.
Well, that's
so he
definitely
does not leave.
That's definitely a good payoff.
It helps out, yeah.
I mean, if we're talking about Bryce Harper alone, I don't know. He's four-time All-Star. Definitely worth the money. Yeah, he didn't have a great season this year. But at the same time, long term, again, that first round draft pick would always be good if somebody else picks him up, takes him off the deal. The other thing that I look at is the longevity of what the MLB is becoming, and especially just the fact that coming off of this last season, historic season, kind of got a couple people back into the sport, you know, got a couple people a little bit more excited, paying more
attention.
There's
momentum back in the MLB right now.
Bryce Harper is somebody that has led that and has directed that and kind of gotten people
it's because he's polarizing.
Right.
That's
and
what
and
the
so
MLB
in this
needs.
Situation, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if when he moves somewhere or if he stays, regardless of if he moves or if he stays, one of the things that he needs to basically do is do what he does, try to get, you know, not have the same type of season
and
he
had. And just stay healthy.
Right. Stay
just
healthy.
Stay healthy.
Keep playing. Because what that's doing for the MLB as a whole is creating that. And same thing with, like, Jake Arrieta and his re-signing. You have different moments and different players who are getting these
Another
re-signings.
Another polarizing
right.
player
They're
who's
polarizing.
Out there.
They're getting the attention.
They have personality.
It's the off-season, and we're talking about MLB, which is a good thing.
Because some of these guys have personalities which we haven't seen in the MLB in a while.
I mean, A-Rod had a personality.
Personality.
I'm
but
just saying.
He was good for the MLB. Whether you hate him or you like him, people talked about him, and that's what you need. You need somebody to talk about almost year-round who's
and
polarizing.
And we don't have a Nomar Garciaparra, a Derek Jeter, an Alex Rodriguez. We don't have
a Roger just compare Clemens. Alex Rodriguez and Derek Jeter to Nomar Garciaparra?
Just
at the time,
why would you
Nomar
drive?
Was...
Look,
actually,
it was
at
those
the time,
three when I was...
You're fired.
At the time, Nomar was actually better than both of those in a short period of years. And that's
you
coming from a Yankee.
How
that's
old
coming from
I
a
am.
Yankees fan.
Like,
oh, hold up. This is a Yankees fan saying Nomar was better than Jeter.
I have
and
David Wells' cards.
David.
All right.
I can't
well,
stand
taking
you guys,
a look
Cecil
at
Fielder.
These deals, you know, you look at the Mets, they were able to sign a lot of their players for arbitration. The Nationals able to sign three more, including Anthony Rendon. Everybody's just kind of getting those processional deals done. What do you think this means for free agency? And, you know, looking ahead, do you think how much will Bryce Harper sign for next year? How much? $500 million?
If he's healthy?
What does he need to do?
$350 million is the number right now. I think it was hyped up to $400 million.
Yeah.
I think it's being brought down a little bit, not just because of his play. I think just the way the money's happening in MLB and teams, the way that the new deal happened for MLB, the salary cap, there's no salary cap, but when you go over a certain amount, the tax ramifications are a lot heavier. So you're not going to see a Dodgers or the Yankees or the Red Sox spend a ton of money over the $200 million threshold. If that makes sense. The way
I hope it's not over. Like, I really hope it's not, you know, a massive amount. Because one of the things that kind of dragged the MLB down was when you saw people like A-Rod start getting those massive contracts. And I think the reason why that dragged it down is you started getting almost a more of an NBA style where you have your 2-3 stars on a team and then a bunch of B squad players, which made the game not as fun because it's not the same as basketball. It's not something that you can put one star out on the field and then all of a sudden attract a bunch of people.
You are right there because more players, it's a lot harder for one player to make a difference in the MLB. But I think the MLB would do some good for another dynasty. We need another dynasty in the MLB.
Do you consider the Giants a dynasty before?
No.
Wait, what?
Do you think the Cubs
season?
Could have a dynasty now?
The Cubs could have a dynasty.
Could
the Giants,
dynasty.
I don't because...
Man,
all right.
Because
are
of
you
the,
crazy?
They don't make the playoffs every year.
Man, he already blew the whistle, and I just want to scream at you. Go ahead.
All right. Well, moving on. Number four on the Furious Five. Moving back to football and some interesting comments being made. Multi-athlete and possibly one of the greatest athletes just by sheer athleticism in the 20th century, Bo Jackson, came out in an interview with USA Today this week, and he said, "If I knew back then what I know now, I would have never played football," unquote. He was referring to the head injuries and really that nobody knew any about that. He said, "The game has gotten so violent, so rough. We're so much more educated on this CTE stuff. There's no way I would ever allow my kids to play football today. Though I love the sport, I'd smack them in the mouth if they said they ever wanted to play football. I'd tell them play baseball, basketball, soccer, golf, just anything but football," unquote. This is a guy who was able to come in and have a breakout year in the NFL, and then he comes in and he goes and he has breakout years for the Kansas City Royals, and he doesn't want to play football. What do you guys think about these comments? And then I just want to point something specifically that he set out.
I think it's interesting.
Do you think it's bad for the sport that here's a great in Bo Jackson encouraging people not to go play football?
Well, we're looking at it from like a couple different perspectives because it's such a big name in Bo Jackson saying
and
that.
And we really haven't seen a name like this kind of speak out like this.
Not necessarily. I think when Junior Seau was dealing with his stuff, that hit me a lot because I watched him growing up.
Lyle Alzado. I mean, he basically turned to mush after.
Okay, but, I mean, we have these situations where it's difficult because, yes, he's a big name. But he also is still in, you know, commercials dealing with football. He's dealing with a lot of stuff that deals with football in the same way, which is his life. So, I mean, in one aspect, I completely respect his comments, and I definitely think that the safety of the game is something that needs to be looked at and continually grown at.
Forced to
right,
play.
Nobody's going to be forced,
nobody,
stuff like that. Parents need to be wise about it. But at the same time, the amounts of movement toward safety that we're making, I think, is awesome. And we need to continue to grow on that. We need to continue to analyze and figure it out as we grow forward. But I'm just wondering why nobody's, you know, looked at what he's doing, because he sounds a lot like the ooh la la's in the Faces. You know, I wish that I knew what I know now when I was younger. It's that situation where any player that looks back, there are situations in their life that they're like, I kind of wish I had done that differently. Football, I think, is his outlet of what he's looking back and saying, because that's something in the broad topic that he can do that. He has the ability to say on a broad scale and say, look, this is football.
Real quickly, honestly, only time will really tell how much of an effect guys like this have on the future of the NFL. But we also thought, coming up to a couple years ago, the concussion movie was going to be this huge thing against the NFL.
Well, the ratings went down, and this season was the first season since concussion movie had come out.
But they started going back up, and now once with the playoffs are back, I think the playoff ratings will be good as ever.
Yeah.
I honestly don't think the playoff, over. I think that less people are playing in the NFL. Less people are playing football in their youth.
You think
but I don't think that's really going to have that much of an issue on the NFL. I don't think we're going to see a decline in talent.
I don't think the game's going to decline. In fact, I think if anything, because the talent is going to get better because it's going to weed out some of the people who may or may not want to
but
play.
But I also think that the NFL still has something special to offer. Football in general has something special to offer. It's unique.
I want to move the conversation to this real quick before we have to move on. There's one thing that he said that I really want to contest. He says, quote, "This game has gotten so violent, so rough," unquote.
What?
Yeah, you played with Lawrence Taylor. Like, what do you mean this game has gotten so violent, so rough?
If
with everything they do and all the
better.
Flags that they throw?
The whole
that's not true
of
at
the
all.
Safety of what they've gotten to nowadays.
What is this game intended for? This game is intended to go out and get the ball from the other team. How are you going to do that? You're going to hit them really hard.
My dad played college football, and he said one of the things they would teach him back then was you go, and when you're on the field, in between the whistle, try to hurt somebody.
It's war.
Yeah. They would say, try to hurt somebody.
My dad was talking about that over the break where he would, in the national championship game, we'd watch it, and he was sitting on the couch and, going, I'd go tell him to, hurt Deshaun Watson. it's like, slow down. But that's the way they played the game. He played college football. He was a high school All-American. That's how they played the game.
Everybody that played
and
a higher level of football
he bought a
knows
Dick Butkus
that how,
jersey. You know, those guys, Dick Butkus and Ray Nitschke, and those were back a little earlier. But then Lawrence Taylor, breaking Joe Theismann's leg. And that's the way the game was played. It puzzles me that he would say that. It puzzles me.
Well, and yeah, it really does. I definitely want to see where it goes. But at the same time, this is a new day and age with a lot of new technology that is actually being incorporated in a good way. So
we'll see. I understand where he's coming from, but I don't think it's going to have too much of an impact so far. But we will see. Moving on to the last topic in the Furious Five, the San Diego Chargers will officially become the Los Angeles Chargers. And boy, what has come with that? There's been a whole lot of it. They're going to move. They will play games in a 30,000-seat arena, the StubHub Center.
So intimate, like a coffee shop.
Yes. They'll share the arena with St. Louis, the Inglewood Stadium that they're buying. But
I don't know
what
if
do you
you've
guys
ever
think?
Had roommate, but that's never fun.
The Spanos family moves the Chargers, lose some money at this, but honestly, what are your first thoughts about the Chargers moving? We didn't know if it was going to happen, and now it even looks like the Raiders might move, so we have all three moves probably. I really thought the Raiders to Los Angeles would have been a better move, and I think this seals the deal on that. But how does this look for, the city of Los Angeles? They barely showed up for St. Louis games, for Rams games, towards the end when they started to do bad.
What was there to show up for, though?
Yeah, exactly. So what do we do? What does Los Angeles do with this move?
Here's one thing. The Rams were 28th in attendance last year. The Jets, we were looking it up. The New York Jets were fifth?
I don't
in official attendance, we don't believe that.
No, well, not
there
for
were
a second.
Anybody at the Jets games,
not
but they
for
were
a second.
Still fifth in attendance, and the Rams are 28th, and both teams sucked. They both were terrible. And so New York market versus the LA market, you're not going to get people to care about football in LA. Honestly, all you have to do is win.
You know what team they care about?
The Raiders.
They care about the Raiders.
They care about the Raiders, and sadly, the Raiders are going to go to Las
honestly,
Vegas.
Honestly, you know why they care about the Raiders? Was because back in that time, you had, you know, the Raiders wore, and you had, they were a culture. Go watch, you know, Straight Outta
Raiders
Compton.
Raiders Nation.
Yeah, Raider Nation. That was the culture all across
the
California.
The Raiders are the outlaws.
Because they had, listen, they had the Rams. The Rams moved. And then they, you know, they've had the Chargers, but the Chargers was kind of the San Diego team, you know? They were down there. So the Raiders was kind of California's
team.
The
one thing that I gather from this move the most is that the state of California is done spending public money on the NFL.
Yeah, they are.
The Chargers moved because they couldn't get any public money, any taxpayer money for their new stadium. And it makes sense that they moved. They said, we'll build a new stadium, we'll stay in San Diego if you guys help us out and pay for some of the stadium. State of California, those taxpayers said no. They don't want to pay for this. They said, you're not helping out the economy as much as you said you would. Now these stadiums are costing close to $2 billion. We're not going to pay our part of that, which is fair for them to say. But now it's fair for the San Diego Chargers also to leave. But it's also now it doesn't really make sense that they go to L.A. They just spent $650 million in relocation fees to move 2 hours north.
Think of all the money they're going to lose by just having their games in the StubHub Center in the next couple of years. I mean, they were drawing crowds of, you know, 50, 60,000, but they weren't drawing 30,000. They're playing in a 30,000-seat arena.
But at the same time, a 30,000-seat arena does not cost as much as the other arena that they were playing in that held, what, 80,000 or 60,000 or something like that. So it's going to be a little bit cheaper. One, I think it's actually a good move. I think that it's a good business standpoint considering what they have. And if really all they need to worry about in any situation is Philip Rivers, because he's got at least two more years of good football and he has been a good player. They've got Keenan Allen coming back from his injury, which creates a lot of offense. They have Travis Benjamin to kind of compliment him.
Melvin Gordon's a great running back.
Melvin Gordon had a great season until he got injured. Really came back strong his second season. So they have offense. They have the excitement that you want. They don't have a great defense, but it's not like really, really poor. So I'm sitting here looking at it from the standpoint of they may be able to put on a better show than the Rams. And that's kind of what L.A. is about, the entertainment factor, which is what football is supposed to be.
Business-wise, it didn't make sense. The way it turned out, it did make sense. And I understand why they're in L.A. The one thing that bothered me was the way they did it.
Oh, yeah. Everything was dropped the same day.
Drop it. We're moving to L.A. Drop it. We got a new logo. Drop it. We're stealing the logo from the Dodgers and the Lightning. And then, we're going to change that because we got backlash so much. What kind of business is that? You don't let it settle in. Those people of San Diego find out today that their team is moving to L.A., which is still, it's only 2 hours north, so understandable.
And in a situation like that, too, I think they dropped it all at the same time because I think they were hoping that, one, it was going to be accepted more than rejected. Two, I think they were hoping that when it was accepted, it would be embraced with the logo and they would automatically start feeling like they were at home.
Honestly, I think that they should do fan submissions. If they're going to have a logo like that, they might as well just let anybody send it in.
Hey, I'm
man,
sure
what a
somebody,
fiasco that was.
Somebody could come up with something awesome, though, I'm sure.